to Adelaide Chronicles, Ken, and thank you for agreeing to do an interview, of course. And in keeping with the requirements of COVID-19, we're actually talking to each other from our lounge rooms, from mobile to mobile. So the sound quality might be a little bit affected. And I'd just like to add that I'm doing this recording on the land of the Kaurna people. So to just introduce yourself and give a bit of a rundown on what it is that you do.
Hi, Sue. I'm working as an emergency physician, and I've been doing that for quite some time.
And so you work in the emergency department of hospitals?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
So you'd be very familiar with the procedures of this virus that's affecting us at the moment?
Yeah, Sue, I've been following it quite some time. I have some personal interests in terms of this type of infection and through my own background. So I followed it right from the outset when the news first broke through, not so much through the main channels, but just off my own kind of interests. So very much aware right from the start back in the end of 2019 in Wuhan, and to see how the whole thing developed, and certainly been absolutely fascinating. And I guess like anybody else, couldn't have foreseen how bad and enormous the problem has become, really.
Did you think that it was possible for it to get as bad as this?
I think, like anybody else, there's a human level to this. There's an intellectual level that you are very much aware the potential of it is quite scary. I think what it really dawned on to me initially, because back in end December and most of January, there was not much information, so it was hard to make conjecture. And I'm saying even conjecture. And we'll explain that a little bit further. All we knew back then through the media that I followed, there was some unusual pneumonia, the trade term is a typical pneumonia, started in Wuhan. But what it was apparent at the end of January, there were publications of what it was. The couple of initial papers on the big medical journals, the New England Journal of Medicine and Lancet, they were focused on what it was in terms of the genetics, you know, what kind of virus, the genetic code, which is very important, there was no doubt, because it enabled us to make the appropriate diagnosis and to study and understand, you know, the virus. But what it was very pertinent as well in the publication, The Lancet, there was a Hong Kong group basically have tracked a family, not in Wuhan, but in Shenzhen in Guangdong province. It was a family of 9 people, 7 of them had contracted this viral infection, and 5 of them been to Wuhan to visit family. And what it was apparent is there were cases in that family, particularly the children, were very well but carrying very high viral load, meaning able to spread the disease. And also, you know, the spectrum of severity was different amongst the cohort of the family. And it was actually very clear to me that that means they are silent carrier, and that means that potentially now the disease has spread. And another aspect is it was the Chinese lunar calendar New Year. So there would be massive movement. And one had to be very much aware now is not just even in China, because of the last couple of decades, how China has grown through its economic might, should I use that term, there are a lot of people now actually would have ability to travel all around the world through different parts of China. And Wuhan is not a small place, so there'll be a lot of connections through that region or province surrounding Wuhan to be able to fly in and out. Certainly, at that point, I realized this is going to be a big problem. The other issue is, you know, one still hope, you know, things are not as bad. But certainly what it was very clear is that, you know, when the lockdown of the Chinese government came, and I'll be a little bit biased to say they would only activate that sort of measure when their political system at threat, you know, meaning that there would be very, very high numbers of deaths and potential unrest. Why they make such critical statement? You can look back into SARS back in 2002. It went on for quite some time. They did nothing. They did not inform the WHO until almost, say, I mean, 6 months, bit of a hard time, but I think at least, you know, 3 to 6 months before they informed the WHO until the super spreader came to Hong Kong and spread to the rest of the world. I mean, the rest is history. People can look at Wikipedia and all the other very verifiable records. And for this one, even though they were late, but they acted quite strongly, and that means the problem would have quite enormous, and that means the potential spread would have been quite significant. And what it also concerned me is that it's all this denial of people-to-people spread. There have been interests, you know, through the Hong Kong infectious disease, public health, and microbiologist visiting Wuhan when they've heard of the situation, and they came back, and their summation is to take this matter extremely seriously. And also you've taken the reaction from Taiwan, who basically implement their lockdown, you know, as soon as China announced their lockdown. You can see what has been happening.
So how was our preparedness for this virus in comparison to other countries?
Well, like what I said, you know, I think I've mentioned to quite a few of my colleagues, I work at different institutions, the response is very interesting. I think SARS never happened in Australia, and I guess people have a very different take on it. There's a very good Chinese phrase called, if a needle doesn't prick your skin, you won't feel the pain. I think what it's trying to say is, if it's not on you, it's not on you. And they not have that real experience, even though intellectually people understand. Emotionally, they have not digested what it could be the problem. So reaction is certainly muted, you know. And even up to the point that it was announced that the pandemic, people were still kind of uncertain. But I guess what really dawned on them is what happened in Italy. I think as soon as they realized, the medical professionals saw what happened in Italy, and they got scared and they got into action, including the government. And they've done very well, I might say, you know, in terms of now looking at how the curves has been flattened and the infection rate has been controlled with all the strong measures. I think it was quite interesting because the alarm bells were ringing, and like America, the simplistic idea about stopping flights will reduce or control the problem, and also the dangerous kind of analogy play on the mind of just another type of flu, or the other analogy is like SARS won't come to us, certainly have had some impact on people's decision making, if I'm critical of. That's what I would say, you know. But having said that, they have done well, you know, with the response from the you know, certainly from the 11th of March, you know, when they realized the problem is not going to go away. Yeah, it's going to come and hit us hard if we don't do anything.
So one thing that you do hear a lot is that there has been confusion about mixed messages. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is, do you think that there should have been a national approach to this instead of national and state?
I think I don't envy the job of the chief medical officer of the federal government and of the different states. And one of the biggest point that I would be critical is, like what I've highlighted, the papers published in these big journals, like our equivalent of the Bibles for Christians, or I don't want to go to religious, I don't want to make any examples of other religion as well, but if you see what I'm saying, Sue, you know, like they were there to warn you, this is a very infectious disease, they have asymptomatic carrier. And at that point, they were still holding on to this, like, we haven't had people-to-people transmission in Australia and we'll be okay kind of attitude. So that has been the problem, I think. Rather than say this is a highly contagious disease, we're shutting our border, we have to monitor it very carefully. It's about playing the discourse or the popular term is the rhetoric correct. I think the discourse is certainly wrong, to try to reassure people. But that's why I was saying earlier, I don't envy the job because they have to maintain, the government advice on not to scare people. You might cause us chaos. It might cause us like panic buying, like toilet rolls. But it's quite interesting. I follow like other countries, and certainly in the Asian country, the panic buying of device has happened like 6 weeks before, and there was a supermarket robbery. Toilet rolls happened in one of the places 6 weeks before our craze of buying toilet rolls. So I guess these sort of thing, you can see what they worry about, but they can still be a bit more careful with their rhetoric, because otherwise, like, it is look very foolish if people play back, especially these days now with the ability on the social media or whatever. You can play back the what has been said, and it's completely contradiction and people winking. Which message should I listen to? But having said that, now the message has been very streamlined, it's been very unified. I think there was some confusion, like school closure and so on, but I think they got that ironed out. And we're certainly not in the worst kind of predicament like they what that has happened in America. And but I think, I do have sympathy towards, the chief medical officers and having to juggle the needs of the political system versus, what the message they have to disseminate.
Exactly. And they do seem to have done that very well.
Yeah, I think they have done well lately. At the start of it, like I said, the more cautious word, you don't have to frighten people, but the more cautious word can be used because the evidence was already out there. It's highly contagious, and you have a fair amount of people could be asymptomatic and carrying it. So that is going to be the tricky thing. I think this is what I going back to what I said, the decision making is very much based on flu, then SARS, then maybe a bit of, SARS and MERS, then maybe a bit of, oh, it's not Ebola, which didn't frighten people. But then again, is now more transparent, with the epidemiological data, that why is it so hard to identify it purely using the approach of catching people with symptoms,
And I mean, that makes it so hard when people could have it without knowing that they've got it.
No, it's been very interesting. I think I go back to following SARS and the Hong Kong University microbiology, medical microbiology group, been absolutely fantastic because of the experience of SARS, and with 17 years on with lots of research, they produce some great work. One of the more recent article published in a big infectious disease journal, basically what they've done, experimental model in the lung tissue, and what this, what they can show is that this virus can replicate much, much more to a much higher viral load before it trigger an immune reaction, unlike SARS. So what it means is people can carry it for quite some time before they get symptoms, and then, they can spread a lot more virus. So that has been the problem, and the other thing is, let's not forget the word novel, because now a lot of people getting infected in the world, being taken out. It should be still in there. It's a novel viral infection, meaning we've got no immunity, and that also means that unlike common flu, we can develop illness. We can, become unwell. We can catch it very easily because we have no immunity to it.